This episode of the Justin Robert Young podcast is brought to you by patreon.com/JURY. Creepy wink. Oh, geez. Normally that would come in stronger, but I think I lost my voice. Hi, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Justin Robert Young podcast. This might sound... What the hell happened? Silverchair started playing. This might sound a little bit weird. It might look a little bit weird. It's going to look a little bit different if you're watching the YouTube video because this is a banked episode. It's not live. Normally we do this as live, 7 p.m., on diamondclub.tv, but also we are on our different set, our alternate set, our sit-down set that we use for Jurymore, and now we got Lavs?
Yes.
Yeah.
One of those.
I guess it's like whatever you say with more confidence.
Oh, for sure. Like whenever I'm talking audio guys, I'm like, I need a lav right now. Yeah. Right now. You're like, don't give him time to correct you.
But now try it the other way.
I need a lav right now. Right now. Don't try it.
I can't even tell.
Yeah.
I don't even know which one came in which order.
Tomato, potato.
So we're going to be doing this, and this is just one of those episodes that I just know if I need an episode, I can just call up Brett. Brett will come on over, walk the block it takes to get from his apartment to my apartment. And we can knock out an episode that'll just be here in the vault. Last time we did this, we had a whole fucking movie franchise.
Yeah. And one of the other times I was just thinking about, because I felt like the song very well meshed with the first time I popped on just for a Jury podcast when we ended up talking about The Mountain Rapist for most of the
time. Oh, my God. Yeah. Yeah. Which, easily the most disturbing.
I'm the guy who still follows me around on Twitter and says hi every once in a while and is never not creepy.
Periodically, like, it just, and you can't say, like, hey, dude, fuck off, because, like, we invented the mountain rapist.
Yeah.
Like, it really is, it's our own folly visited back upon us. He's doing nothing but execute what we said the mountain rapist was all about.
It's like the guy who invented Santa complaining about all the coal he gets for free.
Somebody said Santa coal? Is it like a coal company that wants to get the Santa endorsement?
No, the guy invented coal. The guy invented Santa. Santa goes, poof, all right, I exist now. Also, you're an asshole. Here's coal. And they're stocking. Santa gives coal in a stocking to the bad guys.
Wait, but Santa is spurning his owner? Like, spurning his creator?
Clearly, the owner is an asshole. Like, as someone who creates random characters at any given moment, I feel like we have an inside knowledge on what those type of people are like.
Sure.
Not good people.
Okay, but I like the idea that Santa is visiting his terrible revenge on his creator.
Yeah.
This is a really good idea.
Well, terrible revenge, but also free coal, right? And whenever Santa was invented, that's probably a pretty good deal.
Like, to get, it would be something that you would pay for.
Well, all I'm saying is, like, you can't invent Santa and then complain that you get free home central heating.
I feel like there's so many other things that would be, like, on top of your list if you invented the character of Santa Claus. Especially in this realm where we're imagining that he became flesh and is now rendering judgment upon him.
Yeah, well, I mean, I guess I see what you're saying, but, like, what are the
Also, do you think that Santa's pretty omnipotent. Like, if you go down the superpowers of Santa,
Yeah.
Like soft telepathy at the very baseline, right? If not a network of spies. Yeah, he knows when you've been bad or good, so be good for goodness sake. So it's like, number one, either an entire, a massive, overbearing intelligence gathering operation,
yeah,
or he's psychic.
Okay. Or.
But either way, omnipotent. Either way, nearly untouchable by, like, what we consider to be, like, human means, right?
Okay, but that's Santa. Now you're the guy who created Santa. What are the two best things you get out of being the guy who created Santa?
Well, number one...
I mean, I feel like free coal is up there. Let's you're just shitting on that.
I'm not... Okay, listen. I am accepting your free coal thing, by the way.
Yeah.
Right? What I'm saying is that Santa gets to be... He's like the CIA... and like an urban, he's the CIA and Batman,
yeah,
but universally beloved by everyone but like Jews and Muslims. And meanwhile, the guy who invented him, I feel like, is still just like Larry Peabody, like who had the idea for Santa. Like he still lives in an apartment and he's got an ex-wife and like his kid hates him. Like, and yet sprung from his head was this gigantic operation.
I had this brief moment where you said Larry Peabody, where I was like, no, it was a drunk Scots in a bar. Like no, some drunk Scottish guy in a bar invented him. Stupid Justin. And I like, I don't know why in my brain that was such an important thing.
Yeah.
But no, you're right. It was Larry Peabody, clearly.
Like, he was like, he worked in the Brill Building, yeah, like back in like the
1970s. 1970s? Santa was invented in the 1970s?
Yeah, but you didn't know.
I didn't know. I thought it was more like he was like the Willie Loman of the Victorian era.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Like he's just peddling.
Yeah, like Larry Peabody can't sell any brushes.
Yeah.
And then he like.
But his true idea is this Santa concept he's been working on. One day he goes to sleep, knock on the door, it's Santa. It's like, what the living fuck? I'm Larry Peabody. How did this idea I had in my head become flesh?
Yeah.
And what did Santa say?
Santa's like, well, Larry, you've been a real a-hole, haven't you?
And there's not even a moment where Santa's like, thank you for creating me.
No.
Like, he springs out and immediately is like,
are you kidding
suck
me?
Ass at selling brushes. You created me.
That's
fuck
not
you.
What it is.
Here's coal.
You got it from the wrong angle. It's fuck you. Look at the burden you have placed on me for the rest of my life. I went from not existing at all to now it's my fucking job to watch everyone on the planet and deliver them gifts at the end of the year. And you know what? You didn't even stop there. I don't even have to give gifts to the good guys. Look, I also have to carry around this huge fucking sack of coal for assholes like you. Here, Larry.
So Larry, I hope you like it.
Yeah.
Okay, good news. You don't got to pay for central heating in December. Because I'm going to get you stocked, bro. Brah.
Let's look at, I really want to see
this one. I just like this idea that Santa just gets the list of shit he has to do. He's created. Like, he's fucking, this is not, he's not born, boom, full everything, right? And he just, like, gets, like, his list of shit to do, and he's just like, oh, fuck it, really? All this? Fuck it, for real. All of it. Like, he's yelling to nobody. Like, he's yelling to, like, Mrs. Claus, who's also forming out of the fucking ether. Like, can you believe? Yeah. No, Larry. Yeah. He, all of it. He gave up. I'm going to have a word with that motherfucker. Hold on.
Do you think he probably spent, like, the first 3 weeks of his existence figuring out who had created him? He's like, all right, well, I have to deal with all this shit.
He's born in the North Pole, and he has to track down Larry in fucking his dumb, shitty fucking flat in London in the Victorian era.
He's like, well, at least I'm omnipotent and have some degree of psychic ability so I can get to the bottom of this fucking situation.
Number one, we've just written a Liam Neeson movie. Liam Neeson, Santa Claus. And he wakes up almost like Terminator style. Like, he just appears naked in the snow in the North Pole. And he realizes the burden that is on him. Meanwhile, he looks around. All of the fucking infrastructure for, like, his warehouse and Mrs. Claus and the elves, they're being formed. He realizes, listen, I got to get to work in 2 weeks. But in that 2 weeks, Oh, best believe I'm going to have some fucking words with Larry. How does he know? Does he have a vision?
He so got shit on. I bet he doesn't even get the elves. I bet he just gets the infrastructure and he's like, and now I gotta hire fucking elves.
So this is really, he's going to track down Larry while he's checking his Craigslist and fucking like replying. Like he's just like, yeah, can you please send, please only resumes with experience in the last year? Fuck.
I want it. So like, here's, everyone gets shit on in this story, right? Like, Santa has this big burden dropped upon
him.
Larry is still the Willy Loman of London.
Who's our hero?
What is the one good thing that happens to Larry out of all this? Like, does any positive come out of being the guy who created Santa? Like, you just wished this ineffable being into reality, and, like, all you get is, like, a knock at the door in the middle of the night and get called an asshole and
hey, fuck you!
Rocks thrown at you?
Here's a gift! Here's a fucking one turtle dove right in your face, dickhead.
Give me the one thing, the one good thing that comes out of being the creator of Santa.
I feel like, I don't know if there's anything, because like everyone believes he's real now. If he actually is real, like now the idea of Santa is yet more realistic than you saying that you invented Santa with your fucking brain. And that he proved it to you when he came to your house to, like, yell at you for the burden you've placed upon him.
So, like, he's in the bar. He's like, no, I'm serious. I was the guy who invented Santa. And the guy next to him's like, yeah, whatever, asshole. My uncle invented the sun.
Yeah. And meanwhile, his uncle is raw. He's from fucking Egypt.
This is the weirdest Liam Neeson movie ever.
I feel like Liam Neeson's really only there to be gruff and just be angry that he's Santa Claus. He's just really pissed off the entire movie.
I think the reason this is so important to me is because, to take it back around, we didn't get any positives out of creating the mountain rapist. All we get is harassed by the mountain rapist.
By the mountain rapist.
Yeah.
And that's what poor Larry Peabody got when it came to Santa Claus, man. That dude got fucked. Come see it next fall. We're launching it.
But really, Santa got more fucked than Larry did.
Well, I mean, Santa, we are presuming, is eternal, right?
Yeah, eternally fucked. Look at all the shit he has to do.
But it's not like you know, the Ponchan Llama. Like, you know, where they're seeing who the most likely reincarnation vessels is for Santa. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
like,
so at least
he's just an eternal being. He's just...
I mean, is that better? Like, you just...
Living upon Mount Olympus.
It's Sisyphus. Like, except instead of a rock he's pushing up the hill every year, it's like toys for all the good little boys and girls.
Yeah. So
mind you, he doesn't even like... Santa probably hates children. Especially if he has to watch them do shitty things all year with his mind powers.
So at what point does Santa throw off the yoke of his oppressor and say, like, I'm not doing shit?
Can't. That's why Larry's such a dick.
No, but who enforces?
Is it just like
Ghost, where, like, you know, all of a sudden, like, the rules. Shadow, like, people come out to drag him to hell? Like, he tries to fuck off one year.
Uh-huh.
And meanwhile, it's like, Santa.
Maybe he just...
Come to hell with us! And a shadow hand grabs him, and he's like, I'm Liam Neeson. Get the fuck off me, shadow hand. I guess I'll be Santa this year.
I think I know what really happened.
Crack it.
I think it's more like the movie Thinner. And so the less work he does, the more emaciated he gets. And so it starts just getting like painful and this hunger, this craving.
But he can never die.
But he can never die. So it's just this painful hunger. He gets all skin and bones and everything as he tries to shirk his duties. And the more he does, like, poof, big fat old jolly guy.
In a way, though, that's kind of what the Santa Claus was, right? Like, wasn't like you went through like... Like, they play it off like this shit is cool, but, like, it's the kind of physical transformation that, like, it would be on, like, one of those, like, Discovery ID, like, unknown medical mysteries, like, fucking things.
It's right there,
like,
Tree Man.
Exactly. Like, you would be like, what the fuck? Something that has never happened to any human being ever is happening to me right now. And, like, all y'all motherfuckers might think it's cute because it fits into some archetype, but, like... I'm gaining an irresponsible amount of weight, and all of my hair is going shock white. This is full body shutdown.
Yeah.
Like, my body has just lost control, and now I'm going to die. That's what the Santa Claus is about.
Yeah. And so in reverse, the real Santa, of course, loses weight. And so he just, like, every decade or so, goes through this bender where he's like, no, not going to do it.
So in our in our universe, is our Santa Claus like, I wish I was like the fucking Santa Claus. Or he fucking passes by Cameo by Tim Allen, and he's just like, you had it easy, bub.
You're like, I bet at one point in our universe, Santa has hunted down Tim Allen, grabbed him by the collar, and shot himself in the head while staring in Tim Allen's eyes. And then realized that nothing happened and pushed Tim Allen into a gutter and walked away. Which, by the way, is why Tim Allen...
Can you understand my hell, Tim Allen? I feel like there's the title. Can you understand my hell, Tim Allen?
Comma, Tim Allen.
See, this is when these ideas work, right? Because we can get it done by next Christmas. We can shoot this in the summer.
Oh,
right?
Perfect timing.
You know, and then we have it ready to go. Speaking of movies, you have now all but officially won the winter draft.
Yeah, as long as Mordecai doesn't make $300 million.
And oddly enough...
So you're the only one that still has a chance.
Which I don't, because I've made 77 cents up till now on the back of 90 movies. I bought 90 movies, and none of them made any kind of money in... Oddly enough, I don't feel like I had the worst possible strategy because as it happened, it was like just the well-placed Oscar movie that nobody really saw coming that won it.
Right.
And I bought a lot of lottery tickets for the random Oscar movie that might just take the
all
world by storm.
All in the Oscar time zone, too.
Yeah.
Like, most of your movies are those, like, December movies.
I just didn't get American Sniper, and I also had nothing else that made literally
well, because American
kind of
Sniper
money.
Snuck in. It was way further up on the draft. It just was in limited release for a month and a half.
Yeah, and then it just went wide release. So here's my question. I'm thinking Iron 2015 League.
Oh, we're still going to do that.
Well, I think we got to do it now because I wanted to make it into 2015. Mm-hmm. So it would end in early 2016 because Star Wars is like, I want Star Wars and the Avengers to both
get their full run.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Get, or at least like what we can assume
Star
to
Wars
be.
Is Christmas?
Is like, I think 2 weeks before Christmas, something like that.
Gotcha.
So I wanted to get it into like, I feel like beginning of February. Or maybe it's like when the Oscars happen or something in like early March that we draft, and that goes the entire year.
Yeah.
So what do you think? What's the number one on the draft board?
Like, well, it's either Star Wars or Avengers, right?
Yeah.
So we're betting on whether or not Avengers has it, and we're just doing domestic?
Domestic, yeah.
Domestic. So the bet is, has Avengers built up enough of a cachet to overpower all of the adults that are going to drag their kids to Star Wars relative to like... So kids are going to beg to go to Avengers in a way that they will not beg to go to Star Wars, but parents are going to bring their kids to Star Wars regardless. Right?
I mean, Star Wars has remained a vital children's property because of the cartoons.
Right. As vital as the Avengers, though, when the Avengers has, like, three different cartoons running on channels at any given time.
Yes.
I think it's the Avengers.
You think, all told,
I think Avengers makes more money this year than Star Wars does, and I get that that's a gamble.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think that's a given, but I think that's where I would put my money.
How much would you pay for Avengers?
Are we still doing the $100?
Yeah.
So this is a movie that's going to make... If we're only doing $100,
I mean, let's also just understand what the Avengers is.
Yeah.
Marvel is a guy sitting at a blackjack table that has just like let it ride. Or let's say roulette wheel. He has just let it ride.
Yeah.
For like 9 movies, and like at one point he then took out his life savings and put it down on the table.
Won again. Yeah.
And then doubled down just regular like that 5 more times.
Yeah.
And now is taking out all of his life savings again to bet again. Like this is such compound interest on top of interest on top of interest that, like, you know, now the idea of Avengers, like, being like, oh my God, if we find out that there's a Guardians of the Galaxy cameo or flavor to it, now that takes this movie to yet another level, which you gotta figure is like somewhere in the offing, right?
It does like 700 to 800 million domestic. Right? Like the last one did 650?
Yeah. You would assume it will make more money.
That's a ridiculous number.
You would assume just by inflation, there's no reason why it would make less money than the last Avengers. Right. They've only had good Marvel movies since then.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess that would depend on Ant-Man comes out between
right
now and the Avengers, right?
Right. But Ant-Man won't have any direct ties to the Avengers either, I don't believe.
Wait, does it come out before or after? Is that the first movie of Phase 3, Ant-Man?
I think it comes out July? Is that right?
Then it comes out after.
No. Maybe.
Because I think Avengers is like May. It's like that early. It's like it's the OG Star Wars spot.
Gotcha.
It's in that April, May area.
Yeah, I don't know.
Like the start of summer. So yeah, no, we're done with new Marvel movies.
Yeah.
The next Marvel movie that will come out is the Avengers.
Although, like, Agent of Carter just started the other day. Agent Carter.
C-A-R-T-E-R. No, but I've heard nothing but great things about it.
It's Alias meets the Rocketeer. I love it.
Seems like Marvel kind of wanted to aspire. Like, I haven't watched but the pilot of S.H.I.E.L.D. Yeah. And I think, like, that show can go forever. Like, there's a level of interest that will sustain it in the same way that, like, you know, Arrow or Flash or something are, like, competent. They're good. They're good storytelling with this IP. That's fine. You can live your life on that.
Yeah.
But I feel like Marvel's like, but we can do our Game of Thrones. Like, we can do Justified. Like, we can do these shows that are awesome.
Yeah. And like, presumably that's their play with, like, Daredevil.
Yeah, and Carter being like, okay, let's be a little bit more than just like, hey, look, here's a bunch of intellectual property that we can throw around.
There's, like, no doubt that Carter is better than S.H.I.E.L.D. And I enjoy S.H.I.E.L.D., but I watch it because it's like Marvel property that I've known forever, and like it's fun to watch.
Yeah.
Like, Carter's actually like good storytelling and well shot.
But what are your hopes for the Netflix properties, the Marvel Netflix properties, like the Daredevil?
I would love it to be like something a little bit grittier. Like, basically the Marvel Knights imprint from like the early 2000s. Like, I don't know if you're familiar, but when it was just Daredevil and Punisher and like Cloak and Dagger, and those were the only good things that Marvel was making at the time.
Yeah. Ghost Rider in there?
Maybe.
Marvel Knights?
Eventually he was. Yeah. I don't know if he was there first.
I kind of feel like if that's like really good, like, we just have to realize we are only at like the beginning of like this Marvel dynasty.
Yeah.
You know, if they can do good like Battlestar Galactica level television, like, it might never really break out of like the niche of the geeks, but like the geeks can all stand up and say, like, seriously, this is one of the best shows on television.
Yeah.
Like, that's huge. That's gigantic.
What they did with the comics, right? Like, they started selling us on the popcorn movies, the Spider-Mans and the X-Men and the Captain Americas, and now they can move into the other stuff. Like, they are like a genre IP machine. They just make things that across all of these different boundaries, and they can mine all of those. Thousands and thousands of characters. Like, easily the best move that Disney has made in the last 40 years with buying Marvel.
Unless Star Wars is the success.
Even if it is, I feel like it, like, is already dwarfed compared to everything that Marvel can do.
Which is a testament to Marvel.
Right.
A good Star Wars movie means unlimited money. Like, it's Marvel, no matter what, will always be seen as more of a boy franchise. Mm-hmm. What Star Wars has is, like, which is odd because, like, Princess Leia is so iconic and yet she kind of, like, fucks around for, like, three movies and doesn't really do a whole lot. But it is more of a four-quadrant franchise than Marvel is. And Marvel has done a great job in expanding that, but there's a reason why.
I don't know. Avengers is pretty four-quadrant, right? And now,
no, like, it is. It is. But they have had to expand to that, I guess, is my point. Star Wars is that out of the box.
Okay, but think about this. Star Wars is that out of the box after 50 years, and the Marvel Cinematic Universe is that after, like, 8 years.
Sure. No, I mean, like, I guess it's one of those things where it's like, I remember talking to Andrew about, like, what was going to make more, Avengers or Star Wars, like, 6 months ago, 7 months ago, and, like, he was very much on, like, yeah, you know, you look at how much the Avengers have made and all these movies, like, it just makes more sense. The last Star Wars movie that came out was not well received, so you got to figure, like, maybe this is more of a Batman Begins thing, where it's like, it takes one good movie, and then the second movie makes a kajillion dollars.
Right.
And then that first trailer happened, and it's all that anybody talks about. And you're like, oh, geez. Like, now it has to be good.
Right.
Which is the big gamble. Because, like, you break down those J.J. Abrams movies.
Also, how rad is it that we're assuming that the Avengers is going to be good? That, like, Marvel is such a hit parade lately that we're saying Star Wars has to be good to beat Avengers, not Avengers has to be good.
Well, and this is kind of like, you know, it's kind of like when John Lasseter does a Pixar movie, right? It's like Joss Whedon doing a Marvel movie is like the head of this group is like going to, like, there's only so crappy it, like, can be, right?
Also, though, John Lasseter historically makes the lowest grossing Pixar movies.
Well, who did Toy Story?
Well, John Lasseter did the first Toy Story.
Yeah.
And did A Bug's Life, and then he did Cars.
And Cars didn't make a ton in the box office, but is, like, the gigantic merchandising thing, right?
Right.
Yeah. But he's looked at as, like,
the
forerunner
right.
of, I mean, it's just, like, the fact that everybody else that's come after him has made better movies, I guess. But maybe it's, like, I mean, just because John Lasseter is kind of at the head of it, man, Cars was the disappointment. I mean, like,
we're only talking about Disney-owned properties right now.
It's insane.
It's mind-blowing. Like, 1984, Disney was basically about to shut its doors, and now it owns everything that everyone cares about.
Like, it's nuts that, I mean, I guess anybody could have made the deal for Marvel, right?
Like, anyone could have purchased
Marvel. Like, if Sony wanted to do it. Yeah, I mean, of the mega conglomerates, like Universal, Sony, like those types of companies. Yeah. Like, if they wanted to buy Marvel, They could have. It's not.
And to be fair, it took, like, a leap of faith at that point, right? Like, that was not a foregone conclusion that would be a hit. And already, like, Fox and Sony both had X-Men and Spider-Man tied up and still do. And at that point, no one thought that any of the other characters were, like,
well, no. It took Iron Man and the Hulk before Disney bought them, right? Those two movies were out independently of Disney.
Were they?
Yeah. I know Iron Man certainly was, and I'm pretty sure the Hulk was after that. So it was like Marvel had decided, we're making our own movies. Like, and we're going to set up this universe, and we're going to lead toward the Avengers, and we're going to base it around these characters. And then the two did well.
Yeah.
Well, and Disney was like,
Iron Man was like a Paramount property.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then Disney was like, oh, okay. Well, then let's buy into this, and let's bet very heavily on it. And that's paid off gigantically. But also it's like, Marvel is run by very cost-centric people, you know? It's like, you could have made them a deal, and they probably would have taken it.
Yeah, and were raised on, like, writing $1.50 soap operas every month.
Yeah, so it's like, Star Wars is kind of a different story because, like, you have to deal with the eccentricities of George Lucas.
Yeah.
Who's like, you know, he is... Yeah, did you read the Star Wars book? The How Star Wars Conquered the Universe? Even though you haven't seen the movies, it would be like, as a business book, it's very, very interesting.
You told me about it. It sounds interesting.
But the biggest takeaway you get from it is that, like, and a lot of the reason why you have people have a bad feeling toward George Lucas is because he has spent the last 30 to 40 years trying to keep Lucasfilm's lights on, basically.
Yeah.
And, like, you get it paints the portrait of, like, every time you've hated the, like, when, you know, the Gene Simmons-esque, like, traits of George Lucas to put fucking Star Wars on everything and, like, the merchandise whoring.
Yeah.
And, like, the unnecessary prequels and shit like that. It was all because at some point he tried other shit and he looked down and his accountants were like, so when's the next Star Wars coming out?
Yeah.
And he was like, so we can't keep the lights on any other way? No. Then let's fucking sell Star Wars doilies and let's do the prequels and let's do the cartoons and let's try to make the cartoons into movies. And like the flogging of the franchise seems to have been just to keep everybody getting a paycheck, which is like kind of noble. I mean, in that portrayal is absolutely noble, but also kind of paints this weird picture of like where he actually cares about the property itself.
Right.
Which is odd when in that intervening time, the public investment in that property has only fucking exploded.
Right.
Right.
Like there's no analog to Star Wars, right? Like, is there anything else where like one guy created this thing and like no matter how hard he fights it, people keep loving it?
I don't know. I mean, like, I would assume, I mean, it's funny because we're kind of just coming back to Larry Peabody. But, like, it is the creator's dilemma. I feel like this happens on a smaller scale all the time. Uh-huh. And really what's remarkable about Star Wars is that it was so successful, like, after this, like, weird dormancy period where it's, like, the mid-80s to the mid-90s, there was this decade where, like, nobody gave a shit about Star Wars. Hmm. And then all of a sudden, everybody gave a shit about Star Wars. Like as
that
soon
says
as...
That a lot. That's where I was a child. Everything makes a lot more sense now.
Yeah. No, you were just raised in the dark period.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, it was like the internet, like, kind of brought, like, as, like, the internet's, the very own echo chambers that has made the internet so special kind of rose up, you just realized how many motherfuckers wanted to talk about Star Wars. Like, and you just realize, oh my God, now all of these disparate communities that have given a shit about this thing now can be one community.
Yeah.
And it just sort of like echoes and 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 echoes. And, echoes and, echoes. And then it's like the prequels happen and you just realize there's like this clarion call of like, oh my God, we all care about Star Wars and Star Wars movies are so good. And like, there's no way that this can be a bad movie.
It's almost that like...
Oh, wait.
Oh, wait. It's almost that like the... I feel so bad for stepping on such a beautiful moment. It's almost like the Star Wars community doesn't need something great to talk about. They just need something to talk about. Like, you just throw something at them and they will turn it into a thing.
It's certainly been George Lucas's idea about it.
Yeah.
Because he's like, if you look at the prequels, they're really just like his, I think what he got off on in doing it was the technical elements.
Interesting.
Like it was like, oh, I want to shoot everything on a green screen. I want to like put all of my like state of the art CGI people. Like I want to put ILM. I want to have the best ILM movies of all time. I feel like that was what his big thing was. And anything else, it's like, Yeah, whatever. It's Star Wars. People fucking love Star Wars. Yeah, like,
I don't know. Trade something.
Yeah, so then there's Jedis and, you know, lightsabers, and then he does a flip, and, you know, it's fine, you know, and we'll cast the slam dunk casting. Because really, it's like that. We're almost just now getting back to the opportunity that was squandered with the prequels in terms of casting. Because, like, the casting for the prequels was kind of like where a, like, Woody Allen or Scorsese or Clint Eastwood, like, is now, where they're like, all right, I got to do a movie about an American sniper. So who's, like, the hottest box office draw that would fit the body type and age range for this? Bradley Cooper, cool, all right. And let's cast someone famous for your wife. And, like, I can just make calls and say, yeah, we're going to do this, and it's going to be in a year, so just clear your schedule. Yeah. And that's just what it is. And, like, that it was like that for the prequels. Mm-hmm. Like, Liam Neeson was, like, coming off fucking Schindler's List. Ewan McGregor was coming off, you know, Trainspotting. There were all these, like, you know, these well-respected, awesome actors.
Right.
Natalie Portman, same thing. And then those were such shit sandwiches that I feel like it took a while for us to get back to kind of where we are now, where you have, like, like, even, like, guys that are, like, artists, like, the Tom Hardys of the world and stuff like that are like, maybe it's time for me to look into my, what's my comic book character, like, that I'm going to do? Like, let me, now I'll come and, like Marvel, you know, the only difference with Marvel is that Marvel doesn't want to pay anybody.
Yeah.
Marvel is like, they're like, nah, we're hunting. It's like, would you like to be the Black Panther? Yes, I would. This is the best character ever. Would you like to do it for $310? No, I wouldn't. All right. $340. But guess what? You get to be the Black Panther. Okay,
I guess. Robert Downey Jr., we let Robert Downey Jr. sneak in the back door, and that was a mistake that we all recognize.
Yes. It's like, by the way, all these people are dying in the next movie. We are killing all of them off simply because we don't like their contracts and we're Marvel. And then meanwhile, and, like, so now you have Warner Brothers with the DC Universe.
Yeah.
That's like, no, we'll pay.
Yeah.
Like, whatever. And now you have this Suicide Squad movie where everybody's getting paid.
Yeah.
You know.
Although I heard Tom Hardy backed out of that this week.
Tom Hardy did. And then they're going to replace him with Jake Gyllenhaal, who's another who, like, will command whatever he wants.
Right.
Money-wise. You know. That's how you switch those guys out so fast.
Yeah.
Is, like, you have the money to do it.
Yeah. So back to the prequels real quick.
Yeah.
You said we had all these great actors in the prequels, and yet they turned in some of the worst acting I've ever seen in any movie.
Yeah.
And I felt like that was really similar to all of the movies that M. Night Shyamalan has ever made, where he takes great actors and then asks them to give really wooden performances.
Yeah.
And that has always driven me crazy. And was one of the things that turned me off so hardcore on the Star Wars movies.
So does that...
It goes back to, like, British space people using words that are made up.
Okay, hold on, wait. Before we get to... This is a larger conversation with you. But let's go back to M. Night Shyamalan. Where does he fall off a cliff for you? Is he always making
the
these shitty movies?
The Village is where he fell off the cliff.
So,
like, everything before the Village.
Because Unbreakable, I thought, was, for a while, was Unbreakable was the best superhero movie
that's true.
I'd ever seen.
Yeah, it's true. It had its day in the sun, for sure. Unbreakable was great. Of course, Sixth Sense was great. And then Signs was good. And then Village was awful. And it only continued to be awful from there.
Well, that's where also it just, like, it's just very, very hard to deal with, like, the relentlessness of Shyamalan's, like, everything changes in the third act thing.
Yeah.
You know?
The Village, what turned me off so much in The Village was that he had the everything changes in the third act surprise, but I watched the movie not understanding that that wasn't the way the world was. I just thought that that's the world he had built. Like, oh, it's this village in the modern world.
Yeah.
And then like, surprise, it's in the modern world.
So you didn't, you never thought it was a period piece.
Not, right. It's not even like I was like, oh, I totally saw that coming. It was like, no, I thought this was a movie about a village in the modern age.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you think that the performances got worse? So like from the village on, like he got good performances in the first three movies?
No, I feel like he's always asked for the same performance out of everyone. Even the good movies.
The good movies just had better
performances. But they were like, they were unique in their woodenness at that point. And then towards the end, you're like, oh, everyone's giving M. Night Shyamalan performances where they try not to emote.
But also the and maybe not the quality of actor, but like the type of actor was very uniquely well suited for those first three movies, mm-hmm. right? You know, you have Bruce Willis carrying both Sixth Sense and Unbreakable, mm-hmm. who is great in negative space. You know, like, he can just look out into an empty thing and go like, you all right? And it's like, that feels like, if for whatever reason with him, it feels more impactful, uh-huh. which is why when he phones it in, it's right. shit.
Yeah.
Because he goes back to that well, but when he's not trying, he just can't help but look really fucking bored. Like, but he's very, very good at the negative space stuff. You have Sam Jackson, who is like simmering fucking intensity at all times
yeah.
In Unbreakable to play against him. And then in Signs, you have Mel Gibson and Joaquin Phoenix, who just like, by charisma alone, by themselves, are just like, there's so much going on behind their eyes at all times
yeah.
that like, yeah, whatever, if it's not.
I don't know though, because I feel like Mark Wahlberg is a charisma machine too, and The Happening did not happen.
I don't think he's a charisma machine. I mean, I think like in the right role, he is believable in these kind of hyper-realistic roles.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can see him playing the, like, believe-a-bish, you know, like, kind of, but, like, hyper, like, stylized kind of badass cop or something like that. Mm-hmm. Or he can be funnier than you think he is. But he's not Mel Gibson. Like, yeah. I don't think, like, Mark Wahlberg can't do Lethal Weapon.
Did you watch Two Guns? Two Guns was practically Lethal Weapon and was really well done.
I mean, I don't mean to say that he can't do action comedy.
Yeah.
I mean to say that Lethal Weapon was amazing because in the same way that Conan the Barbarian was great because they found Conan the Barbarian, like Lethal right. Weapon was great because Mel Gibson is
a crazy guy who might as well have become a police officer.
Yes. Like, is this, like, lunatic on yeah. the fringe of society, like,
happens to make movies, could have been a cop, flip of the coin,
whatever. Yeah. Right, like, it's just, he is that guy.
Yeah.
And I feel like Mark Wahlberg, there are other roles that Mark Wahlberg is just better suited for with right. that, but he can't, like, that is a movie that was a franchise that was birthed because, like, Mel Gibson is just so amazing, right?
Right.
And I don't feel like he, like...
What's so amazing? Went through a period of amazingness.
Well, I mean, like, Wahlberg has never... Like, he has been a part of other projects. He's yeah. good, but it's not like... They're not doing Three Guns and Four Guns and Five Guns, yeah. right? Because he was so amazing in that role, and he was right. just so hyper-realized and there.
Yeah.
In the way that Mel Gibson was with Lethal Weapon.
Yeah. Also, it's way easier to get Danny Glover to do multiples of a movie than it is to get Denzel Washington.
I don't know, man. I mean, like, Denzel can be had for a price.
You think? What's a Denzel Washington sequel? Like, name one.
Oh, I guess. Yeah, if you look at sequels, I guess he hasn't really done a whole lot of
yeah.
them.
Danny Glover, though. He'll cash that check.
Are we going to see Denzel? Where's the Denzel comic book movie?
Two Guns. Two Guns was a comic book.
Okay, but like, I mean, Marvel, DC, superhero.
Type?
Yeah.
Geez.
I mean, you got to figure he is more in the mentor role.
Yeah.
Than the.
I bet he'd make a really great Jon Stewart Green Lantern.
Do we have a Green Lantern yet?
Ryan Reynolds.
No, but like in the new.
Oh, I don't know.
In the new one, in
I
the
don't know.
If they're going to introduce him in Batman,
if they have, been
Batman
a
v Superman,
and
v
and
Kramer,
the bunch. And Batman bunch. Versus Superman and the gang.
Are you? I'm kind of looking at the DC, the unfolding DC universe, like my friend who just bought a car and wants to drive it around, but also got really drunk because he's excited he bought a car. Like, it's just like, man, it's expensive.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of ideas that are going into this that I'm pretty sure are terrible. But like, maybe he'll just have a, maybe it'll just be a good time. Yeah. You know, maybe it'll just be a fun thing that happens.
It's really weird how differently I look at the DC stuff versus the Marvel stuff. Because you're right, like Marvel announces like, oh, plus like Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver are going to be in this movie. I'm like, great. And then they're like, plus Wonder Woman will be in this movie. You're like, oh, you really need another character?
I agree. I totally think that like it's just, man, like it's hard to have a lot of faith because like, I mean, like,
because I watched Man of Steel recently.
Oh jeez, that's not a fun movie. I'm not saying it's a bad movie.
I'll say that. If you want someone to say it, I'll say that. You
need bad movie?
I'll say that.
Did you not like it coming out of the theater?
I did not like the Man of Steel movie.
Yeah.
I didn't enjoy watching it at all. I didn't have fun in that movie.
Now, where do you think the failure is in that movie? Like where does it fall apart for you? Because that's another one where, acting-wise, I mean, I think you can have questions about Superman.
Yeah.
But other than that, you know, you're looking at top-notch people to
play those
roles.
Is like, somehow you made an entire Superman movie without the idea of optimism at all. Like, the one thing that is at the core of Superman, and somehow you made 2 hours of none of it.
Like, in fact, it's, like, paranoid.
It's paranoid and destructive and pessimistic. It is not truth justice in the American way.
No, it's, like, lying for a good cause. justice, if we can fit it in. And also, you're an alien?
Right. Yeah, it's... I don't know about that movie at all. I didn't... I can't remember any of the plot points.
Homeboy was a great Zod, though. I really feel like...
He was even better reading that letter.
Reading the sorority letter? Oh,
no,
where's that lady? I feel like we should track that lady down.
She probably is doing her best to not be found at this point.
Mistake.
You gotta turn into those skins.
Man, she was just so good. I just want more of that. I just want her
Oh, that's a great question. In your position, so you wrote this letter that blows up on the internet.
And for those of you who don't know, this was a letter that I guess the head of a sorority wrote to the rest of the chapter right before Rush, but it was like very aggressive, comically obscene. But, like, well-written.
Yeah, funny.
Very funny. Like, it was both funny in how it was constructed and also funny that somebody would be this aggressive about a sorority Rush chapter.
It had, like, this sounds a little too effusive for what it is, but it had a rhythm to the writing that most writers can't nail.
Yeah.
Most writers, like, will use the same linked sentences over and over again. You get kind of bored writing it. You get the idea. It had so much rhythm.
Yeah.
As a writer, that I was genuinely impressed by this letter.
And like, and quotable lines. I will still say weird shit that does weird shit during the day.
It was really well done. So here's the thing. She wrote this great letter that is awful and obscene and no one should ever write.
Yeah.
But does it so well. And it gets her kicked out of her sorority. It gets her expelled from school. Now, if this were Justin Robert Young getting kicked out of the school and the sorority, what's your first move when you realize you have written the most viral letter that has ever hit the internet?
It's all right. So am I me or am I a girl?
I
that girl?
I feel like the move is gender agnostic. But let's say, for the sake of argument, you are you.
I mean, because I feel like it is a fundamentally different thing.
Well, maybe you like, are I mean, you,
just in this reason.
You are not the personality you. You are not the Justin Robert Young who podcasts like 5 days a week. You're the Justin Robert Young who was in college.
Well, but all right, but I guess it's very easy for me, even at the most respectable I would want to be out of college, which would be a newspaper reporter that aspired to cover big, hefty events, right?
Yeah.
If then I was famous for something very vulgar and disgusting, it's easier for me to do that as a guy than it is to do it as a girl.
Yeah.
Like, because
I can
rely on a preconceived notion of like, oh, like the hard drinking journalist, you know, like the black sense of humor, like this is just what happens, like behind the headlines, like there is mythology to that, right?
But you're missing the pop that you get out of being a woman. I feel like this letter alone would not have been the hit that it was if you were a dude.
Well, I guess, but like I have more options if I'm a guy, right? Like, let's say it becomes famous. We're assuming it becomes at least this level of famous.
Right.
I can take it in a bunch of different, like now I'm qualified to write about sports. Now I'm qualified to write about pop culture. Now I'm qualified to write about politics. Like, there's a lot of like rude elements of other things that I can
like
do as a guy.
The first thing you do is go to BuzzFeed, right? And whore yourself out as a critic.
Sure, yeah. But I guess what's different is if you're a chick, like you have to follow just this like gender, like just this like I'm the girl who yells about chicks, like, and I'm gruff kind of thing. She has like one path and it's this letter because there's not like, what's the female Howard Stern, you know, like what's the female, you know, like I can name, like when I was a kid watching SportsCenter, the comedian Nick Bakay used to just do like, I'm a hard drinking gambler. Here are my gambling picks on SportsCenter on like Sunday mornings and stuff like that.
Yeah.
There's a laundry list of people that being the like, yeah, I just tell it like it is kind of dude like exists for guys. There's not really a whole lot for chicks.
I feel like that's why you get such a big pop out of it though, right?
Yes.
Like, because those,
you can
those
be the
analogs don't exist, that's why she became such a big thing. Having written that letter and why she could have turned into that skit and continued to be a big thing.
And yes, if that succeeds,
right,
then that's what it is. But it's like, if she doesn't play everything perfectly, right, she doesn't turn into the skit exactly, there's not a second gear she can like shift into.
Yeah.
You know?
I just feel like
so it's let's say she wants to. And she goes to BuzzFeed and she goes to whatever else like that is coming to her. And she's like, yes, I'll take the job. I'll be the, like, I bitch about shit lady. Like, I'm really into it. I want to write all these letters about everything. And then they're like, yeah, but that was, like, really big a month ago.
Yeah.
It's not so big now.
Well, the thing
you
is,
you don't really have a lot of experience. We'll pay you, you know, 11 grand a year to write this stuff. Like, there's not going to be a bidding war. You know, there's just, she has what she can take. Yeah. And other than that, she's like, I don't know, well, maybe I'll just go back into PR like I was getting my fucking degree in.
Yeah, she could have been a huge vlogger if she wanted to, if she wanted to go the independent route. But the bottom line is, anything that she could have done, she could have used, her second move could have been going to hiding. And instead, she squandered all that, and her first move was
going. By the way, how do we know that she didn't, like, that she isn't writing columns for BuzzFeed right now?
She might be. But I remember immediately afterwards, she, like,
she definitely went into hiding.
Took down her Twitter account and wasn't answering press requests or anything.
All right, we're gonna find out. Like, so so what would you say? We're gonna find out what has happened to her as best the internet can figure out right now. What do you think what is she doing right now?
She is she either went to a different college or a community college, or she did the like rule following thing, whatever that might be. Like, she might have gotten the best job that she could or went to the next best college she could, but I don't think she's doing anything other than trying not to be this girl.
Okay, so by the way, this is, again, the sorority letter rant. Rebecca Matheson was her name. So now I am typing. Rebecca Matheson, or sorry, Martinson. apparently. So she has a Twitter.
She's back on Twitter.
Swagatron McPancake.
That's definitely her.
College Park, Maryland. So she, man, I feel like Rebecca Martinson just stunted right on your expectations.
Really?
She's the associate editor at brobible.com. She turned right into that skit.
Oh, nice. Good job, her. Well, then just we'll fix all that in post.
and indeed, wait, hold on. Rebecca Martinson. She has written columns, including my first double blowjob. no, she has done. She has done exactly what you would expect.
Yeah,
and also she is writing a novel.
Hey, that a girl.
And here we go. Yeah,
gifted writer. According, don't stop saying that.
According to Jezebel, this comes from. Wow, in October 2013, deranged sorority girl Rebecca Martinson writing a novel, thank God. who, by the way, I guess the most famous phrase out there was cunt punt.
Yeah.
Cunt punt was the thing. All right, so we will play the Michael Shannon thing at the end of this, just in case anybody hasn't read it.
Yeah.
I feel like we should wrap up here. Yeah. Brett, your big thing that you're working on now is Mission Pick, right?
Yeah, Mission Pick. It's only in the iOS App Store right now, but you should definitely go there and download it and review it. And it's actually legitimately fun. I play every single day, and so do several hundred other people.
When are you like gonna just take $1 billion in VC money and make it the biggest app on the planet?
Whenever $1 billion shows up on my front door.
How has the experience been so far?
It's been great so far, and we are kind of moving in that direction in that we just sent out the first press release last Wednesday or Thursday. We just did our first couple of interviews. We have a couple more interviews this week, and we've had like
interviews for what?
Just random articles or
oh, nice people who just want to talk to you about shit.
Yeah. The app. So one article came out this Saturday and was a pretty big pop. It was on an iPhone photography store. So we're moving in that direction where we're like, next move is get as many people to play as possible, and then it's get a little bit of money so we can buy an Android version, and then it's turn this into a real business.
And everything's coming along swimmingly.
So far, so good.
And by the way, if you downloaded this app early, download it again because it's a whole new version.
Oh, completely different.
Yeah.
If you have not seen it in the last month, you have not seen it. This is a new thing that... it's the same concept behind it, but this is head and shoulders better than it ever was before.
How was that process of like, you know, knowing that it wasn't to where you wanted it to be, you had to release it just because you got to get it out there. Then you find this new designer and now it's like this whole different process. Like, is it hard to kind of shift expectations or is it just part of the process?
I think it's hard to shift expectations with the people who experienced it before. But as far as it being part of the process,
well, I mean, internally for you,
the next step. Internally for me, it was a certain level of frustration in that I knew that it wasn't as good as it could be, and eventually it just got to a point where I was like, you know what, like I'm not about raising money. I'm not about trying to do this as cheap as possible. I'm about trying to make this as good as possible. And right now, that means throwing a bunch of my own money at it, and that was the solution that I went with.
So it was your own journey. Yeah. Like, I just got to bring in a professional. That just means tossing my own cash.
Yeah. Or, yes. Someone bigger and better and more qualified than myself. And we found that in spades with this guy who has been great and is an integral part of the team now.
I just want to talk about the other app that he does. It's what I don't know why. It's because I can't have it that I want it.
Uh-huh.
It's such a silly and simple, fun app.
We probably shouldn't talk about
that. We're not going to talk about
it.
But just know this guy's brilliant, and not only is Mission Pick amazing, but he is a font of awesome ideas.
Yeah, Shane McCafferty, actually. If you want to look him up, he's on Twitter. It's at EGVroom, E-G-V-R-O-O-M, OOM, but he also does a bunch of other iOS games, and they're like across the board great.
And both Canadian with an Irish accent.
Irish living in Canada.
Yeah. Oh, so he's not Canadian.
Right.
So he's just living in Canada.
Yeah.
So.
Same thing.
Fucking great.
Yeah.
It's amazing. All right. Well, normally we go out. Well, here, let's do the traditional way we go out, and then we will at the end of it play the sorority letter.
Awesome.
Folks, if you would like to support this show, you can go ahead and do it by hitting up the Patreon, patreon.com/JURY. If you would like to write us email, you can do so at justinrobertyoung@gmail.com. Make sure you put jury in the subject line. Find this podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, Downcast, wherever the fuck else you want to download this shit. And, of course, you can follow me on Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat at Justin R. Young. But until next time, this is Justin and Amtrekker, Brett Rounceville, asking you, please, that even if you are at the end of your rope, do us a favor, and please don't die.